Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Further revelations this morning in England surrounding the as yet unnamed BBC presenter at the centre of allegations relating to sexually explicit images. The Sun is today reporting that a 23-year-old has now claimed that the celebrity broke lockdown rules to meet them during the pandemic. This was in February of 2021. And separately, the BBC yesterday reported that a person in their early 20s had come forward with a complaint about the presenter and said they felt threatened and frightened. In a moment, I'll speak to Akhil Ahmed, who's former head of religion and ethics at the BBC and Channel 4, and political editor of the Financial Times, George Parker, will be with us too. First, though, I just want to play a clip here of Jeremy Vine on his Channel 5 programme this morning. Jeremy Vine is also a BBC Radio 2 presenter, worth noting, and he was in conversation here with his guest, Carol Malone.
Because this presenter hasn't identified himself and has not been identified, you could almost say anything about the person.
Is it in the BBC's remit to name him?
I think the BBC has behaved with extraordinary decency in this. And I actually, I'm maybe in a minority, I think Tim Davie, the Director General, has done everything right. I think when the story broke in The Sun originally, a lot of people will have said to him, sack the guy. And he was really determined to try to be fair. Now, if he'd thrown the presenter straight under a bus, it would have been better for him, Tim Davie. But he hasn't done. And I actually think as a result of the revelations yesterday, mainly lockdown partly, but also the abusive messages to a young person, which is inexcusable, I think he could sack him. I had a situation. I was going to see Bruce Springsteen at the weekend. My wife said, are you going to be safe there? I mean, that's how serious this thing is. And she gave me a baseball cap and said, you better wear this. Oh. And imagine if I'm in that situation. It's ridiculous.
So you would say to this person now, it's time you found the courage and came out.
I think it's better for him if he does. I think he needs to. He will have to answer this. And what's happening is all this stuff is aggregating with no response. Now, he must have a defence. He must have one. Maybe he's going to say it's all a misunderstanding. Well, I assume it. But the idea that he can just remain anonymous forever and then one day walk back into the building with his ID pass. Oh, no, that's not going to happen.
Jeremy Vine there speaking a little earlier. And I want to go first to George Parker. George, what's the latest this morning? What's been happening?
Well, I think really it's these comments from Jeremy Vine, which I think have really sort of put the cat among the pigeons as far as the BBC is concerned. Jeremy Vine, obviously a senior colleague of the unnamed presenter, speaking very passionately there and basically saying that the presenter should now go public, but also saying that he thinks that the presenter is intending to play this long. So what you've got is this standoff at the moment where basically a lot of allegations are being levelled at this unnamed presenter. The BBC's been asked by the police to pause its own investigations while the police look into this issue. And we don't know whether they're going to mount a formal investigation, but that whole process could take days or even potentially weeks. So as a result, you've got the BBC at bay and you've got this presenter whose name has not been put into the public domain still holding out. And, you know, there's a lot of unease, I think it's fair to say, in the BBC about the way this is being handled.
You heard Jeremy Vine there, and he's explained that because there's an allegation now of breaking COVID lockdown rules and also threatening and frightening a young person in messages, that has moved this into a different realm. Do you think that view will be shared?
I think some people will share that. I mean, look, the two reasons why the name has not gone to the public domain. First of all, the question of whether people making the allegations can prove them as a defamation case. But then there's also the privacy argument. Everyone has a right to a private life as well. So what the media need to be able to do is to prove that some illegal activity has taken place. And then it's in the public interest to disclose that. And you know, if there was a breach of the lockdown rules, that's potentially one such example. If there were a sharing of explicit images by someone aged under 18, that's another potential example. But as I said, so far, the police have not decided to carry out a further investigation into this. And as long as that's the case, the presenter will probably feel justified in thinking, well, I have a private life. Yes, the BBC seems to have verified that the presenter sent some fairly expletive-laden and threatening messages to this young person who's made the allegations against him On the other hand, this person apparently hinted that he was about to go public with the name of the presenter, and you can probably understand why the presenter would be fairly angry about that. So it's a very, very complicated situation. Lots of people operating in very grey areas, grey legal areas, particularly the media, but it's a story which is just absorbing the country at the moment, and you know, it's showing signs of dying down.
Jeremy Vine saying as well there that the Director General, Tim Davie, he believes has behaved very well and in a measured way, but questions are outstanding for the BBC, because we heard yesterday senior managers there, they put the claims to the presenter last Thursday, but that was 7 weeks after the initial complaint. Why are they saying it took so long for the presenter to be told about this?
Well, plainly that's caused some concerns in the government, that why what were the procedures in the BBC? And we know the BBC is a, for its many great successes as a broadcaster, it's also a very cumbersome and bureaucratic operation. BBC has tried to explain this very long gap between the original complaint being made and action being taken on the basis that there was an initial complaint. The BBC did try to get back to the parents of the individual concerned and hadn't managed to make contact. It was only when, at the end of last week, new allegations, detailed allegations surfaced, that the BBC then got involved and the Director General, Tim Davie, got involved as well. But obviously, there will be questions to ask. And Tim Davie himself has recognised that red flags need to be raised in the organisation. They need to be elevated to the top levels very quickly, certainly more quickly than they were in this case.
George, thank you very much. George Parker there, political editor with the Financial Times. And as I said, I have Akhil Ahmed, former head of religion and ethics at the BBC and Channel 4. Good morning to you.
Morning.
So this is a complex story in journalistic terms as well as in relation to how the BBC has handled it. And we were discussing that with George a moment ago. What's your own assessment of how the BBC has dealt with this so far?
Well, I think, it's very hard to kind of like say that they've got it right or wrong, because we have to remember that this is not of their doing. This is a member of staff. We have The BBC has around about 22,000 members of staff. So we must take that into consideration. There's no getting around it that actually a complaint was made in May, and then it took 7 weeks for the presenter to be talked to. But there are reasons for that. And the reasons are that obviously that there was that initial conversation of 29 minutes that the BBC have told us about. We don't know what was said. We don't know what evidence was put to them. What we do know was that it was kicked upstairs and a decision was made that this was serious enough to warrant an investigation. Now, investigation can be with a small eye and with a big eye. And when you've got, as Tim Davie said, 250 serious incidents which are investigated over the last 6 months, then you have to understand that's a lot of things to do and not a big department, just a few people working in this. Mm-hmm. So an email gets sent, a phone call gets made, and on both occasions there's been no reply. Now, we can have a conversation, and I think that's what Tim Davie himself is talking about when he talks about we need to have a bit of an investigation ourselves about our processes, about whether or not that was vigorous enough. But, hindsight is a lovely thing as well. When you've got 250 things being investigated, you come back to them over time. And he did make the point that's what they were doing.
And they did
from last Thursday onwards, though, I would say, from last Thursday onwards, it's definitely ramped up. And I think the situation then is, I think Jeremy Vine's correct in that sense, which is that's the point when you do start talking to the person involved, the presenter. Because before that, you're investigating it and you don't know at what stage it's at. And it may be something that you just throw away because it's a malicious complaint. So in the early stages, and that's what they were trying to ascertain, what actually, because we don't know what evidence they had. You can't just start throwing allegations around without knowing some of the basic facts.
So once it appears in the Sun, that's when you go after it from a BBC point of view.
Well, no, but they were going after it beforehand. But the point being that actually, we can have a conversation at some point when we unravel it as to whether or not they went about it correct in the correct way. But they were going about it. But once the Sun went to them, then it then becomes a completely different story, because the parents have now gone to the Sun. They've made specific allegations which are put to the BBC. The BBC, quite rightly, they would then say, we would need to see the evidence. We don't know if they have or haven't been shown that. But at that point, you've then got to go to the presenter and say to them, look, this has now escalated, because that's not now going, it's not now an internal investigation that you're trying to ascertain information as to whether or not this is a story or not. It's now been brought to your attention that a newspaper is going to publish this story. At that point, you have to then find out yourselves what is actually going on, because you've not been able to figure that out yourself in the last few weeks. But this story is now escalated. So it isn't the case that, oh, because the Sun did it, that's when they jumped. They had to, because what do you do? Well, you know, they can't sit on their hands and say, well, no, I'm not going to do anything about it.
Well, it's very complex, isn't it? Because they tried, the BBC told us they tried to contact the complainant twice unsuccessfully. I assume they mean the parent of the person who is the alleged victim in the first complaint.
The parent and the step-parent of the individual, yeah.
So what are you expected to do as an organisation if you can't verify what's being said?
Well, that's the issue. I mean, that's the issue that they will look at, whether or not they were vigorous enough in that. But actually, if you send an email and you don't get a reply, and then you make a phone call and that number is incorrect, it doesn't connect, you can only keep on sending those emails. Yes. And those phone calls.
Yep.
Because at what point, because if someone's complained, it's then up to them to kind of like answer your request for information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then if you're the BBC, you've got a whole other set of victims now because of what happened over the weekend when people were speculating about who this was. And you've got people like Jeremy Vine and others who had to come out and say, this wasn't me. Nicky Campbell as well has spoken publicly about the impact on him. And the BBC has a duty of care to those people.
They do, and I actually have a lot of sympathy for some of the things that have been said. I mean, Nicky in particular is somebody I know really well, and I actually asked him if he was okay, because I know what that can be like, you know, particularly when people pile in on you, and through no fault of their own, I get that. I think at the same time, you know, you have to. I understand Jeremy Vine's kind of frustration. I really do. But at the same time, you know, he has to understand that there are other people involved in this other than himself. And I think that can be hard. It can be hard at times because of what he's going through and the story that he tells about having, you know, his wife saying to him, put a peak cap on and are you going to be safe? And that's horrible. And nobody wants to get anyone to go through that, particularly if they're completely innocent. But, you know, there are questions about whether or not there's any serious illegality. There are questions about whether or not there's actual any real evidence. There are questions about whether or not this is just a moral kind of like line that's being crossed. All of these things that people's careers are at stake, that are, you know, very serious kind of issues relating to whether or not they will ever work again, and there's a police investigation. I just can't imagine that, you know, at this. I mean, whilst I understand there's a real a groundswell of opinion that says just come forward, etc., you can also understand why you wouldn't come forward, because one, are you going to get a fair hearing, and two, you would want to probably see how this plays out if you were being advised by some people to do that. I imagine that's what I would be saying, you know.
How likely do you think this person will be now to come forward and say who they are?
The one thing that I would say is that in these situations is actually when somebody comes out, or when there's allegations made about an individual, often you find that other people come out of the woodwork, and that's what we're seeing now. Now, we don't know how true or untrue they are, these allegations, but we do know that, you know, particularly the one with regards to the abusive text messages, that they BBC have verified that did come from a phone belonging to the person in question. So there will be more people coming out. You know, at the moment, though, what we're seeing is nothing more than a pattern of behaviour as opposed to a pattern of illegality. We don't know about that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that we don't really know the full story. And I think I would be probably sitting tight to see what happens over the next few days. But ultimately, you know, it's always best to be in control of the story yourself. It's always best to be on the front foot rather than the back foot. And I would imagine a whole series of scenarios have been mapped out. And right now, I think the police are not using the word investigation. They're using they're assessing the evidence. I would probably be advising, or I imagine is being advised, the individual to just sit tight for a little while.
I was watching the news at 10 last night, and I think it was about 15 minutes that they spent on this story. They had a report, then they had two correspondents in the studio, followed by Ros Atkins with his video wall going yes. through all of the facts. Now, Stephen Barnett, who we've spoken to on this programme, was on Twitter afterwards, hopping yeah. mad over the amount of time that the BBC had devoted to this on the news. But it's a very tricky situation, and one I know you're aware that we're in here ourselves, where yes. we're reporting on ourselves and our own organisation. It's a difficult balance to strike, isn't it?
Oh, totally. And I feel for journalists in RTE and actually the BBC. I've been in the BBC when we've had to do these things ourselves. And actually, the BBC is very good at investigating. It does go to town. I think sometimes you have to be seen to be to be across this. I also think that I understand Stephen's point of view as well. But ultimately, you know, we live in a society where, you know, news, you know, the decisions you make about what you talk about are often what you feel people are interested in. And if you look at the subject trending and you look at what the amount of conversations, whether it be newspapers or radio or television or social media, of course, it's going to be a big story. It may not necessarily be his or my idea of what the story should be yesterday, but the fact of the matter is, it is a big story of interest to the general public. And I think the BBC have done a very good job of it. I think if you watched the interview with Tim Davie yesterday, you would say that, you know, he wasn't given an easy ride, and he was given a few questions that were there to trip him up. And I think that's exactly what I would expect from the BBC, and that's probably what I expect from your colleagues as well, which is when you're doing a story about yourself, particularly when it comes to television and radio. I think television and radio in the UK or in Ireland, etc., I think we're more vigorous about being seen to do the right thing, as opposed to what you often see sometimes, and you sometimes get this on newspapers, a kind of like a reluctance to kind of expose what they may have done or what they may have got wrong.
Akhil, great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time. Akhil Ahmed, former head of religion and ethics at the BBC and at Channel 4. Back after this.
Text 51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.